to the break, so we can keep disruption to a minimum. I'm now going to hand it over to the second of tonight's speakers, which is John.
My name's John, I'm an addict.
Hi, John.
Hello. 40 minutes seems like a long time right now, and I've got a strategy. I'm going to talk very slowly. No. Thank you, Gary, for taking this very well-organised meeting. I haven't been here before, but I'm very impressed. And thank you, Charlie, for asking me to come and do this. Charlie is part of the beginning of my story. Charlie and some others came out of an NA meeting on a front line in West London. I was on the front line. I was all right. I was only on methadone, and I was trying to get some cocaine, so I didn't actually have a drug problem. Charlie and the other four guys in the car, one of them at least knew me, and they stopped the car, and he came out of the car, and he said, "You might want to look at this," and it was an A4 piece of paper. It was an A4 piece of paper. I think it went over to the other side, but it listed the NA meetings in London. So I don't know how many that was. Did you count them, Charlie? I don't know how many that was. There weren't that many. It was those days. And I think I said something like, "Oh, no, no, I'm frightened." No, I didn't say I'm frightened. I said, "I'm all right. I'm okay. I'm fine." I bet I said I'm fine, because that's what I said a lot of. I'm fine. And I don't really need this. And I took the where to find, and I can't remember. Maybe I got some coke. And I went back to the tower block flat that I was living in on my own. The guy that I'd been sharing it with had gone missing. The guy whose flat it was in Pakistan, and he was posting back AML letters with 5 grams of smacking them. So these lovely blue letters, the postman would pop through the letterbox and they flutter down, and it worked really well. He sent 5 grams, I sent 100 quid, and he sent 5 grams, and I sent 100 quid. If only I'd sent the 100 quid. You know, that was the part of the... I couldn't get that bit of it together. I was really good at waiting for the postman. I was really good at checking with the postman. Had he forgotten anything? Had he missed anything? But I was rubbish at going and sending 100 quid to Pakistan. I just couldn't do that bit. So they stopped arriving. But I think that where to find, because this was a piece of A4 paper, and I think at that point maybe they would still arrive in these letters, because the guy lived in the hope that they might. And I thought it was a really funny thing that I used this A4 piece of paper to make packets, and I put £10 deals in them or whatever, and there was this where to find going around. I haven't yet had anybody come to a meeting and say, "Do you know what? I opened my packet and there was the address of the Stoke Newington meeting," and no, that hasn't happened. Oh. It's a funny thing, you know, after all these years, when I start talking about my using, I start to flutter a bit. I get feelings about my using, you know, and to sit in a room this size and tell you all, yeah, I'm quite... But I'm going to tell you, I was a down and out user at that point. I had my best day. My best day ever was robbing the chemist. The first time I robbed the chemist was sitting in the pub, looking at the chemist, and thinking, "They got drugs in there." Well, that's, you know, but thinking, there's back gardens, there's a basement, and I think the basement's empty. And getting a £28 lump hammer, which is the kind of thing that I had in those days in my van, full of bits and bobs, and climbing over the back wall with my brother-in-law, partner's brother, and we punched a big hole in these breeze blocks in the basement. We went in the basement through the hole. We went up the stairs to the door of the pharmacy, the Holy Grail, and I started to mess with this door, and all the bells went off, so we ran back down the stairs, out the hole, into the van, and went home. But symptoms of addiction, obsession. I suffer from obsession. Once I start thinking about something, I can't stop thinking about it. My mind takes the idea, plays with it, runs with it. I was still thinking about it at 3 o'clock in the morning. And what I thought at 3 o'clock in the morning was, I bet those bells are still ringing. And I bet any police have been there, they've had a look, there's nothing happening. I bet now's a really good time to go back down. So, without the lump hammer, I had boots on, brown leather boots that came up my calves, and down there I put screwdriver, something like that. Not much more than that. And went back down there and climbed over the garden and went up the hole, came down the other side, went up the stairs and got to the... And yeah, the bells are ringing. Got to the pharmacy door, screwdriver, and just chiselled round where the lock was. Just chiselled it out with a screwdriver until the door opened. And the door opened, and there's shelves of drugs, and Robert was talking about them a bit earlier. The Seconal and the Tunal and all these weird things that you don't get anymore, but all these strange drugs, the Valium and all this stuff were on the shelves. That was easy. But there was this big fridge screwed to the wall, this big white safe screwed to the wall, and I knew that that's where the good stuff was, and I had to have this thing on the wall. So, and I thought, yes, I remember coming through the hole in the wall. I remember there was a lump of that steel conduit that they used to run electric cables through on the outside of buildings. There was a 8-10 foot lump of steel conduit. And I thought, right, screwdriver, I can make a hole in the plaster wall behind this cabinet, which is bolted to the wall. I can get the steel in. My mind, you know, it's one of those that I remember now is I was working at my very best. I was using all my intelligence, intuition, skill. Everything I had was focused on this cabinet. And I was going to get it. And... this worked. I made a hole in the wall behind the cabinet. I got the steel conduit and stuck it down there. I pulled it and, bless you Archimedes, off it came. This thing came off the wall. A big white cabinet. Fantastic. I then had to go back downstairs and build a ramp with a plank. The hole in the wall and a ramp down the other side. And I'm down there and I'm pushing this thing up the ramp and it's starting to get light. And I've taken a while. And then down the other side and then along the garden and then up on the garden wall and then down the other side and leave it there and go and get the van, the magic van with all the hammers and stuff, and get home and put it in the van and take it back. And what a prize. What an absolute prize. I am... Hammer and chisel, it took quite a while just to open this thing flat on the floor with girlfriend and partner and some other, and getting a corner up of this box, and there's some cash in there. They use it as the safe as well. They're fantastic. This cannot get any better. Pop, pop, bang, it opens, and the Holy Grail. Tubs of they used to call them smackjacks, heroin pills. I forget what the quantities of them now, but they were a fiver each, and there's pots of 100 of these. There's everything in there. There's red ficeptone liquid, green ficeptone liquid. There's injectable morphine. There's just this stuff, just this rake of stuff. I am now looking for an attaché case, and I'm going to go around, and I'm going to be a purveyor of fine prescribed pharmaceutical vegetables, the very best that you can't buy. Okay, this was a highlight. this was a highlight of my using, and with the money I took her to Portugal and did the using make me happy? Well, I think perhaps as little as a month later, I'm down to the Largactyl. Now, the Largactyl, for those of you that might remember it, is a dribble drug. You take a couple of these, and suddenly you can't close your mouth properly again. You're holding on to things, and you're... That's where I ended up on that. So that's kind of how my... It's a bit like Shireen was saying, you know, about there was this up and down situation with thinking that I'd got it and then being paralysed. I like talking about that because it's still one of those things that I'm really proud of. And there aren't many groups of people that I can tell and they'll go, oh. I did the same chemist four times. Ever. Going back, it was for the perfume, and then it was for the athletic support. And I did different things. I went in the roof and came down through the ceiling and got stuck. Got stuck halfway through the ceiling while I was doing jury service. 3 weeks jury service at Knightsbridge Crown Court. And there I was, wriggling in the ceiling. Again, it was getting light, wondering whether I'd get out before they came to open the shop. All right. Let's get that out of the way. Prison came after that, funnily enough. After that. Yeah, I didn't go to prison for that. I went to prison for other things. I went to prison for silly things, it seemed to me. Not paying my fines, you know, getting arrested on the way out of the country with 17 different drugs on me. Not counting the gram of smack that I had in a badge, and not paying the fine. I got a fine for that at Southampton. I tell people I had trials for Southampton, but I didn't. I was on trial instead. And they gave me a big fine, and a year and a half later, I still hadn't paid any of it. And I walked into West London Crown Court, West London Magistrates Court, and they gave me 28 days, which was it was a surprise. I'd left the dog at home and the fire on, you know, that was a surprise. So I wasn't expecting it, and it was a surprise that when I arrived at Pentonville and there was this horrible smell, it was our dinner. It was what we had to eat, and somebody said, eat lots, eat loads of this stuff, get loads of bread, get a pile of bread on your tray that goes up there somewhere, and you'll fit in fine. You know, people will recognise that you know what you're doing here, because I patently didn't know what I was doing there. It was all a really big surprise. I was 30, and the significance of that, I think, is that I was born just around the corner, and I hadn't been back there. You know, it was just that I had to be born there, and I was 30, and you know that paranoid, questioning part of me saw some significance in having 14 days, because I did half of it in a prison that was just around the corner from where I was born. Like, this is where my life had. This is where my life had come to. This was not a coincidence. This was the result of all the choices I'd made in the direction that my life went. I had a pretty clear idea. It was up to me. You know, I decided where it was going to go, and this is where I ended up. I was in Pentonville, trying to work it out, trying to make some sense of what was happening, because there was some background kind of thing saying, hang on, you know, what's going to happen if you just carry on like this? I don't think it was so much on that one. 14 days really wasn't quite enough. And when I came out, I just went straight back to using. And the next time I was arrested, it was for dealing. And I got a bigger sentence, and I had a bit more time to think. And I came out of there with a plan. My master plan was that if I only use heroin on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, I wouldn't get a habit. I'd be able to afford it, and I wouldn't need such big quantities to get high. It would all be okay. If anybody's thinking of trying that, I can assure you that it didn't work for me. Not at all. No, it didn't work for me at all. The next time I was in prison, I came out, and my master plan this time was I needed a trade. If I was a bricklayer or a plumber or an electrician, I would be able to earn enough money to buy my stuff. I wouldn't have to commit crime, and I wouldn't have to deal. I didn't want to go back for dealing because the sentences just got bigger and bigger. And I managed to do a TOPS course, an electrical TOPS course. I can't even remember what training opportunity. I don't know. I can't remember. But the government provided these courses, and I managed to keep it fairly together. You know, this was a dole money and 5 days a week in a skills centre. Quite a decent course, really, looking back on it. And I learned enough about electricity and to get a job. And I got quite a decent job. I got a job with the BBC as a wireman. And I was down in, it was all very peculiar. I'd been given a phone number, and I rang this phone number, and he said, do you know anything about studio installation? And I said, insulation? Yes, I've done loads. He said, good, I'll be there Monday morning. I had no idea, nor did these people that saw me arrive. And I had no money, so I had to walk from Maida Vale to the Strand, and I had no money for the canteen. So they were wondering what I was about. But I managed just to fit in. I managed to fit in with these people, and I had this good job. It was so good, I couldn't resist taking in some cocaine to whack up on Wednesdays just to keep it even better than it was. And they noticed something going wrong, because everybody that I was working with seemed to start drinking more, and the BBC had to club. They were all... So they moved me to Newcastle. And, you know, no point going to Newcastle with a gram, so I bought a quarter of an ounce to go to Newcastle with, and I think I dropped a syringe in the toilet one afternoon, and I think people saw it, and they said, this contract for you is over, but, you know, keep in touch, we'll call you, but it was a familiar message. It was over, and I was driving back in my VW bus, rolling joints on my knees, and back to London. And I came back to London and had a few grand that I'd got together through this. And there was a house in Ledbury Road, top of Ledbury Road, right next door to the pub. And John and Hannah lived there with their two boys, two kids. And they were bang at it. And they said, move in here. And I said, why not? I said, that seems a really good idea. The house just became one of those houses. It was one of those houses where people would come at any time, night and day, to use, to sell, to buy, to hide from people, and then they'd be jumping out the windows. Somebody died in the toilet. It was one of those. She'd go out and get doctor's scripts, and we'd get a phone call saying she was found unconscious in a toilet in Holloway, and kids were running around outside. Yeah, it was just a nightmare, and I was fixing up the working girls. They'd come in, and the one particularly I remember, I'd inject into her neck, and I'd have a little bit of cotton wool there, and I'd squirt a bit of it into my cotton wool, that's how I'd get my hits and that's how I'd survive. But it was horrible, really. It was horrible. And I got beaten up by a blind man. Can you believe that? I got beaten up by a blind man. Everybody took the piss out of him, but not me. They'd tell him they were giving him an injection and he'd get nothing and anyway, beat me up. I don't think of that one very well. It was a nightmare. It was horrible. And I had not a clue, you know, I had not a clue what to do. All I knew was that I had to have something inside me or I felt awful. What happened, in fact, was I got offered a job selling hamburgers and hot dogs in the West End, outside the WAG, outside the Whiskey A Go-Go, in that little pedestrian part of Gerrard Street. There was this big Iranian guy that ran these, one outside the Astoria, one outside the WAG, hamburgers and hot dogs, little caravan things, and it was kind of okay in that we went out at 10 in the evening and we worked through till about 4 in the morning, but you made some money and somebody was there at the end of it and you scored and you used. And with one of these guys, Paddy, got a flat in Fulham High Street, and things were kind of together. Just enough money to use, just enough drugs. Do a bit, you know, every now and again you get towed into West End Central or Vine Street, one of the police stations, and fined for, really, I mean, these hamburgers were 10 pence and we sold them for £1.40. We should have been prosecuted for more than what we did, but well, the offence was just being there. And then one night while I was doing that, Paddy, who was outside the Astoria, would regularly get rolled over by the punks outside the Astoria. They'd just tip his whole thing, hot fat everywhere and sausages and burgers, and he'd come round to me. But this night he came round and said, I've taken all the money and I've run for it. And I said, yeah, good deal, let's go. And so I took all the money out of mine and we left, and we just left it all there. And ended up in Adam's flat in Courtney Street somewhere for a week. And we're getting there. We're getting there. The Tower Block, this is where we got to the Tower Block in Roehampton. Because the guy that had the flat in the Tower Block had gone to Pakistan and somebody else had the keys. And we got the keys. So Paddy and I moved into the Tower Block in Roehampton. Paddy disappeared and I found out later. I'll save it for later. So I was on my own. The letter stopped arriving. I had two things to do in my whole life. I had to, because I'd worked that one out. I'd worked out that to get on methadone, you had to have a suppliable habit. Every time previously, when I'd been desperate, and I really wanted to do something, when I really wanted to clean up, I'd go along and say, I've got to have some methadone. And they'd say, yes, okay, give us positive samples for the next 3 weeks, and we'll give you methadone. And I'd look at them and I'd think, you don't really understand this. If I could give you positive samples, I wouldn't be here. You know, that's not how it works. I need methadone because I'm ill. But they didn't understand. But now I got it. So I had the regular supplies. So I went down to the Fulham Parish Hospital, Charing Cross Hospital, DDU, and I said, I'd like to register for methadone. January, just before Charlie. And so I'd got methadone, I got registered, and two things I had to do in this Tower Block flat. I had to go out and get a fortnight's methadone script, from Charing Cross DDU, and I had to go out and get a personal issue gyro once a fortnight. And these were the only two times I had to go out. The other times when I'd go out, I'd be looking through the spy hole, make sure there was nobody there. I'd go down to the garage on the A3, the Kingston bypass, get tins of soup. I had a television that only worked on its side, like that, not always with a picture. I had some bags with clothes in. You don't want to hear that, it's too horrid. And on one of these trips to get my gyro, I think, I ran into Simon. Now, Simon was 6 months clean. I'd known Simon for years. He'd been in prison in India and Pakistan, and he was very serious about his using. Very serious. He would chop out the gram that I was about to get half of, and he'd chop it and chop it and chop it and chop it and chop it, and then he'd divide it down the middle, and he'd push the two halves apart, and he'd look at them, and he wouldn't be happy, so he'd spread out. Chop it all over again, and then divide it, and I'd give you this, give you a small half, just give me. But no, Simon had to. Simon was, he looked really different. He was clean, and he had a bit of weight on his cheeks, and he said, "I'm 6 months clean. I've been in treatment. In fact, I'm now on my way back down to my treatment centre in Plymouth for a reunion." And 6 months clean, Narcotics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, yeah, right, what do we know, what do you know, brain, Narcotics Anonymous. That's that where to find that Charlie's mate gave me. And that's that place where they don't even drink, isn't it? Yeah. And everybody carried on talking. We went for a coffee. It's a long time since I'd been for a coffee. I went for a coffee and I listened to him, and something was happening because he gave me numbers. He gave me the number of the NA helpline, and he said if you're in during the day you can talk to somebody, but if after 6 o'clock they give you a list of where all the meetings are. So talking to anybody, I'll wait until after 6 o'clock and I'll get a list of these meetings. And I might have done that for two or three nights. But on the Monday, it said there's a meeting tonight at 6:15 at World's End in Chelsea. It's a beginner's meeting. And I thought, oh, that sounds beginner. That sounds... and I could get there. I could, so I got down to Chelsea, 6:15. How confused I was. I was still wondering which pub they went in after this meeting. I was, just confused. But I was there, and I got into this room, and there was one person I actually knew in this room. There were about 20 people, and this guy did the chair, and he talked about being caught that day jumping his fare on the tube on the underground. He hadn't got a ticket, and he'd got caught, and they'd taken him to a police station, and he said in the police station he got on his knees and prayed and said, please get me out of this one. So there were a few things in there. There was jumping the tube. I understood. That's how I lived. My favourite was get on the bus and say, wait until the conductor. We had conductors in those. We were well looked after in those days. We had conductors, and he'd come up and say yes, and I'd say Marble Arch, please. And he'd say Marble Arch is in the other direction, which I knew. But by this time, I'd already got quite a long way, so I'd get off. And tube stations, you could kind of go towards one side, and then at the very last minute, faint and go the other side, so neither collector got you, and get through there. I was also picking up stuff off doorsteps, restaurants particularly, you know, bread and milk and cream, particularly gallons of cream. I was quite partial to a gallon of cream. And shoplifting. Shoplifting where it was duvet covers and smoked salmon were the favourite things. So I'd come home with, you know, the joys of recovery are coming home with eggs, bacon, bread and coffee, not a duvet cover and four packets of smoked salmon, which you've got to go and trade before you can get a decent breakfast together. How did I get there? I'm still with Simon, and I'm at this newcomers meeting and identifying. That's what's happening. I'm identifying. And at the end of this meeting, I've got it. These people are being honest. That's what's been missing from my life. I'm 42 when I'm in there. I'm 42 years old. Missing from my life since, I don't know when, how long or how you actually count it. But certainly in my using years, there's been almost no honesty. And almost no feeling that I'm having here now, which is, hang on, this is it. This is it. There is light at the end of this horrible tunnel I've been in. These people appear to have the answer. They appear to have the answer, and it's not complicated. They're talking about very simple, basic stuff, stuff that I do every day, that they're saying, no, you've got to be straight with people and you've got to pay your way. And I think, well, I know this. I do know this. It's not complicated. And I really, some sort of awakening, material awakening, I think, because spiritual seems to be, anyway, I didn't read any of that at the time. But at the time, I went back to the meeting at 8 o'clock, so I had another meeting at 8 o'clock, and I got my white key ring, and I got another list of meetings on an A4 piece of paper. And I've been clean since then, and I've been going to NA meetings since then with varying degrees of absolute commitment. I read the Jesper today. It was particularly good, May the 6th, because I want to look good. I want to tell you all that I read Jesper today. I don't read it every day. I read it because I'm coming to do a chair in case anybody questions me. Well, did you read Jesper today? I go, yes, I really, yes. It was particularly good. It said that if somebody walks into an NA meeting and we're a serious, miserable bunch of people, they're not going to be very excited about coming back. You know, the recovery is about enjoying ourselves and being relaxed and being able to to have some fun about ourselves. You know, take the piss out of me. No, don't do that. No, just being able to be relaxed and funny and enjoy life. And that's how I am. 2, 3. Most of the time, I think I'm fun. I think I'm quite a good laugh. I like jokes. I like. I like to think I'm easy. But. But I've got to say, walking through the tube from Charing Cross through that big long tunnel, there might have been 15 people that I wanted to punch. You know, educationally, not actually grievous bodily harm. But I still, what I want to say is, having been successfully clean and sober for quite a long time, having had varying degrees of commitment, you know, I wanted to be the very best addict they'd ever been. And then I wanted to be very laid back at it, and I kind of move around between those things. But I've never lost sight of the priorities that I have, and staying clean is the absolute bottom line. Being honest is something that I aspire to and aim at, and don't always manage. Somebody I heard in a meeting once did this wonderful thing. He said, it's my birthday, and what I want to do is just look at what I've actually gained from being here. He said, I am more generous. I'm kinder. I care more. I help other people more. I'm more patient. Spiritual Bob says, go to the longest queue in Tesco's, because you can practice your tolerance and patience wherever you are anytime you like. I'm starting to see that they used to confuse me, but I can see that kind of advice is really useful. That's what, when I get up in the morning, I'm the same as any of you. I'm an addict trying to work a recovery. And the same things that get you are the same things that get me. I'm in a hurry, or I'm not doing anything at all, one of those two. I'm not trying to fit in with the universe. So I want to control, I want everybody to get out of my way, I want them to... Don't stop dead in the middle of the road, can't you see? I'm right there. Move. That's the stuff that I do, that's the stuff that I practice with. I'm trying to be kind, I'm trying to be honest, I'm trying to care. And some days I'm quite good. You know, I waited 15 years, for a relationship. I was 42 when I got into recovery. And I didn't know, but I had an idea. You know, I needed to start soon. I needed to find somebody and start soon if I was going to be in a relationship, have children, I mean. And if that wasn't going to happen, I didn't want to be a 50-year-old dad. I'm not knocking it. What anybody does is fine. What I didn't want was to be a 50-year-old dad. I think because I'd had a friend whose father was a lot older than him, and I saw there were difficulties. So anyway, my mindset was, you find somebody soon, get in a relationship. Thank goodness the program covers this. The program says, not encouraged to get into a relationship for the first year. My sponsor says, not encouraged to get into a relationship until you've done step 9. Who do you think you are offering yourself to somebody else when you don't even know who you are? For me, that was good advice. So I waited. I and it didn't happen. And I went to Thailand, did boy stuff in Thailand and all that, and I went back to Thailand and I did it again. But I didn't find, and that didn't work. You know, that was patently. I mean, it's all kind of justified on some. Oh yeah, that's how they live. It's okay. That's how they do. Yeah, right. It didn't fit in here anyway. So I got through that one and worked through it, and finally, 15 years clean. I kind of got to the point where I was saying, right, maybe that's not what's meant for me. I'm not. I know, and I'm fine. I've got a nice life. I've got some. Live, car, job, I've got everything that I like. And then I met her, and that was 7 years ago. And we're very happy. We're like a couple of children. We talk baby talk to each other. And I don't mind, I recommend it. We love each other very much. Life goes on, keeps getting better, more will be revealed. Everything I've heard here, there is nothing, and I would find something, if I had if I could find something wrong with this, I would. There is nothing in there that I've ever had any difficulty with. It has only helped me. Go for it, if you're thinking about it, go for it. Thank you very much for listening.
I'm now going to hand it back to our speakers for clean time.
Hello, in Narcotics Anonymous, we celebrate clean time with teams, claps, hugs, and excessive noise. Is anybody celebrating multiple years of recovery today, this week?
Aye, aye. Thank you.
Anyone up for some primer gray? 18 months. Okay, anyone up for 1 year? Close and dark. Find at the bottom of your head. Okay, 9 months. Any takers? 6 months. Okay.
To me.
To you.
Thank you very much.
This is, our natural state is using. This to get these is to prove that we're winning. Anybody 90 days today or this week?
Go on.
Anybody 60 days? Anybody 30 days today or this week? National Colour of Surrender. Does anybody want to welcome to NA Keyring? Keep coming back.
Thank you. Okay, could somebody please read We Do Recover?
Dear Life Caroline, I'm an addict. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best as we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts have ever had the last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts, which is available to all of us. It's a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Mark 42.
Okay, if you want to get a commitment to this group, you want to see how it's run, get involved in it. We have a business meeting on the Friday before the last Monday of the month where all our committee members attend. Thanks to tonight's greeters. Do we have two people, ideally a male and a female, to volunteer as next week's greeters? Thank you. Have we got a guy who's willing to greet? Thank you. If you get here at 6:30 to greet people, that'd be fab. Set up person, Cliff.
I'm Cliff, I'm an addict.
Hi, Cliff.
One of the helpers who sets up here. So basically, chairs over there go upstairs. These chairs and all these go to the back there. And then the front two rows stay here, and the back two go back there as well. Thanks for everyone who helped last week. If you're not going to help, please can you just go? this is a homeless shelter, and they try to set it up for people, and thank you who did help, and thanks to those who did help.
Thank you. Okay, as Cliff says, this now becomes a shelter for the homeless.
Oh, and don't scrape the chairs.
Don't break the chairs, yeah. You're welcome to chat outside, but please vacate the room as quickly as you can if you're not moving stuff. This is an anonymous fellowship, which means that who you see here, what you hear here, please let it stay here. Can somebody read the pink Justice Today card?
Yeah. My name is Miguel Amunadi. Just for today, tell yourself. Just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery. Living and enjoying life without the use of drugs.
Just for today.
I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery.
Just for today.
I will have struggle. I will try to follow to the best of my ability.
Just for today.
Through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life.
Just for today.
I will be in the frame. My thoughts will be on my new associations. People are not using, I will know I found a new way of life.
Okay, my friend from Memphis, would you like to lead us out in serenity prayer? Yeah?
Plymouth and he went to Broadbury. So yeah, I didn't know if that was the same. He went into treatment.
Everybody got a hand?
Got two of them.
Just join me in the
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can.